Go ahead.
Hello, this is the Press Row Podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Press Row Podcast, the definitive sports video game show, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. Well, all right, we are back. It is the Press Row Podcast for your Friday, March 6th, 2015. If you are listening to this on Friday, March 6th, or Saturday, March 7th, why are you not at PAX East? We are having our Press Row Podcast panel probably right this second. If it's Saturday, March 7th at 4:30 p.m., you should be in the Bumblebee Theater in Boston at the Convention Center, joining myself, joining T.J. Larriman, joining Sumit Sarkar, joining Kevin Larrabee, and joining Garnet Lee as we talk about sports games at the crossroads. But if you are not, that's okay. Thank you, everybody, for joining us here. We have a terrific panel tonight, moving from left to right on your radio. Up first, we have a man who is extremely excited at the opportunity to once again watch his Seattle Sonics fold and miss out on the playoffs in the Western Conference. From Pasta Padre, Mr. Brian Weedy. Brian, welcome to the show.
What are you talking? Are you talking about the Thunder?
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant the Oklahoma City Thunder. My bad.
That's just hurtful. Can we just get on to what the whole topic of this episode is? Season 3 of House of Cards.
So good, right?
Oh, man.
All right. Up next, is it Kevin James? Wait, no. Is it George Clooney? No, it's TJ Larriman from That Sports Gamer. TJ Larriman, welcome back to the show.
Rich, you're really cruising for a bruising, as they say. I'm getting some salt in my hair, so I'm looking a lot more like George Clooney these days. But hey, if you are at PAX, also make sure at 1:30 you stop by the Bumblebee Theater. I'll be over there talking about live streaming. Good stuff.
Excellent. Up next, we have a man whose live tweeting of NC State basketball games has become must-see TV. From Polygon, Mr. Owen Good. Owen, welcome to the show.
It's like Bill Bixby, you know, turning into the Hulk. I wake up the next morning and I go, what the hell did I just write last night? This team is going to be the death of me. And I say that every year. We're going to take it up to the end. State's going to lose to Syracuse. This podcast is going live on Friday, right?
That is correct.
Okay. The State will have lost to Syracuse, and we will lose the first game of the ACC tournament and make it a nail-biter on Selection Sunday, like we always do. I have no idea. This team is so much more talented than its record implies. It just – they drive me up a wall. I have nothing else.
And up next, we have a man who has already triple binge-watched Season 3 of House of Cards. From Polygon, Mr. Sumit Sarkar. Sumit, welcome to the show.
Well, actually, Rich, I've not been watching House of Cards. I've been watching other better TV shows.
Yikes.
No, that's not actually necessarily an indictment of Season 3. I just, Season 2 went a little bit too far off the rails for me. Instead been watching stuff like Justified and The Americans and Better Call Saul, of course, Last Week Tonight. A lot of that's because, I was in India for 2 weeks earlier, and so I just, missed a whole bunch of episodes there, and so I had a lot to catch up on. So, that's what I've been doing. And I'm playing some games, too, believe it or not.
I do not believe it. But you can acquit yourself well in a few minutes. We'll see if we believe you. Might even have to take a vote. So yes, welcome everybody to Press Row Podcast. I'm excited as always to be able to talk about all this good stuff with my good friends here on the panel tonight. We are going to have some fun. We are going to talk quite a bit about VR. I don't know if you've been paying attention, but there has been a lot of buzz recently, a lot of news, a lot of announcements about various virtual reality devices, headsets. Sony's got stuff going on. Valve's got stuff going on. Obviously, Oculus Rift. So we're going to talk about that implication, the implication of VR on sports games. We're going to have some fun talking about that. But before we do that, we are actually going to do something we haven't done in a while. A bunch of people have asked if we could bring it back every once in a while, so we're going to do that. We're going to talk a little bit about what we've been playing. So I'm going to start with you, Sumit Sarkar, since you put yourself out there. What, sir, have you been playing?
Well, Rich, I have been playing a video game that well, I guess first I'll talk about one that I've been playing not sort of my own accord. My girlfriend recently started playing Rogue Legacy. I think it was free on PlayStation Plus one of the past few months.
Right.
She has a real bad Rogue Legacy addiction. So I was playing a little bit of that. That's the kind of game. It's the epitome of one of those like just one more run kind of games, because it's a permadeath game, but you're running through this castle, and the layouts of the castle change over time because they're procedurally generated, and it's got this sort of 16-bit look to it, super hard game, kind of like a in the vein of Spelunky. Those kinds of games are not usually my thing because I'm not very good at those kinds of games, but I can definitely see just from playing it a little bit in between sort of like when my girlfriend got frustrated or whatever, I can definitely see how it can be one of those like just one more try kind of games. Rogue Legacy is really, really neat for sure. Now separately, for myself, I have been playing a game on my PlayStation 4 called Super Mega Baseball, which I think you guys have heard of. We talked about that plenty, so I'll skip over that. I'll just say we've been playing it. But more recently, I started up an entirely new game for me, which is The Swapper. This was also a free PS Plus game, I think, in January. I can't remember. But it's a puzzle game that was originally released on like a PC like in 2013 or something. And it's like really, really cool. It's this sci-fi game, so it has this like really kind of dark aesthetic. So the setup is that like you are a guy on an alien planet in the future. You're in a spacesuit, and you're like examining sort of the rocks and structures and things on this planet. So a side-scrolling puzzle game, and you have the ability to you get these powers where like you can make clones of yourself, up to 4 clones of yourself, to solve puzzles, and like when you make clones, like you all move at the same exact time. It's like playing defense in like RBI Baseball 3. And also the way they design the puzzles, there are these restrictions. So what you do is you, like I said, you can clone yourself, but you and then you can also you eventually gain the ability to to switch between the clones, like you know which one you're controlling. And then there are like these lights that block one of or both of your ability, and so you have to sort of work around that for the puzzle. So that's a really, really cool game, kind of creepy, and yeah.
So it's true, you have been playing video games. I do stand corrected. TJ Lowerman, what have you been playing?
Rich, as you know, very much like Christian Grey, my desires are unconventional. And I love my crazy Japanese baseball game that I can't read. I like to dabble in some rugby from here time to time. Rugby 2003, great game that EA Sports put out. I've been playing Don Bradman Cricket on the PS4.
Yeah.
I know nothing about cricket. I'm not even going to lie. I know there's a bowler. He's the pitcher guy. And they have innings, I think. Something's called a... I don't even know. What is it called? An over? Overs. There's overs?
Yeah, overs, yeah.
I don't know what that is. The runs are like just total bases, which makes no sense. But the game's actually pretty good. It's got, your regular exhibition online mode, single-player career mode. So I'm a batter for the Western Warriors. I'm pretty good. I actually hit a wicket today when they had to bring me into pitch. That was pretty sweet.
The funny thing is, TJ, just so you know, because I've watched you play some of this game, I actually know what you're talking about when you say you hit a wicket. That would not have been the case 3 days ago.
Yeah. The one thing that they didn't put at the front of this game, which they should have, there's a – it's like the Don Bradman Academy. No, that's a lie. There is a tutorial thing. I thought it was the Don Bredman Academy. Definitely not. Yeah, they have like a tutorial in here, which made me actually kind of understand cricket. Because I played the first couple games like, oh, I'm just going to kind of play this like baseball. And that worked for the most part because I was on super low level difficulty. But once I came in and I started doing some of the practice stuff, I actually kind of figured out what was going on and how you want to throw pitches and what a googly does. Yeah, cricket's a very weird game, but this video game is actually kind of good at teaching you about it, which is one of the things I loved about, I think it was somewhere in like FIFA 10 when I started getting back into soccer. I learned everything that I needed to learn to get back into soccer just from FIFA. And I think this Don Bradman game is going to start getting me into watching cricket, though word on the street is cricket games or cricket matches can last like 7 days. So that might be something right there. I just wonder if they're going to implement some sort of the batter can't step out of the box in cricket in the future, because that would help help speed things up.
Yeah, definitely. I will say, I mean, just watching you play that game, it does look good. I mean, it's legit. It does not appear to be a bargain title at all. I mean, it's looks like a next-gen game. The commentary, I thought, was interesting. I mean, that game, even though I didn't know what the heck was going on half the time, seems like it is, it's, you know, if you are into cricket, it seems like that one's going to do the trick.
Yeah, and you get to know all the lingo, like sixers and why the guy wipes his hand in the air, which is the weirdest thing I've ever seen when you get a four.
Cover drive for six.
Yeah. And then you do the thing with your hand.
Cover drive for six. That's the only thing I know. Oh, or, you know, you're caught out at silly mid-off.
I have seen the mid-off. When you look through the pitcher's eyes, you can look at your defense and see the mid-off. But it's cool, actually, in the career mode, they have like a pretty in-depth player creation. Like, you can have that cool floppy Carmelo Anthony hat that he wears, but I'm not going to wear that. I just wear a regular baseball hat, like a gentleman.
Do they have photo game face?
No, I wish. But you can make your guy look pretty good. They have some pretty awesome hairstyles, and they have some old school accessories. So there's one where it looks like the guy just has duct tape on his hands and sticks on his legs for protection. So, I mean, if you can check it out, try it. It's a pretty cool game.
Well, we've definitely.
That sounds like the Madden option where you play with a helmet without a face mask.
Who would do such a thing like that?
We have.
Maybe me.
We have definitely been able to check the box for several people who have been asking for some cricket talk on the show, and I'm not joking. There have actually been people that have been asking for that, so we can check that box. All right, Owen Good. What, sir, have you been playing?
Well, I don't know. You know, I want to talk with TJ a little bit more about what he's been playing because, you know, cricket is intriguing to me. I don't know a thing about the game. But this, what is this, Bradley Cooper cricket? What the hell is this?
Don Bradman cricket. I think it came out last year.
Okay, Don Pardo cricket, and it's available in North American markets.
I think you can purchase it at retail in North America. I don't think it's on the stores yet. Like the PSN.
So Xbox. You bought a disc. Okay, you bought a disc, in other words.
Oh, actually, let me add to the funny part of the story. I actually got a review code, but it was only for the UK store. So I had to go.
So you had to create a UK account?
Yes, and I don't have an address in the UK, so I used Anfield, Liverpool's football stadium, as my address. And my, yeah, okay. if you have a UK PSN account and want to add me, it's TSG-upon-tyne. And if you're from over there, you know how to spell that.
So I just looked on Amazon in the game. I don't know if it's released in the US or not. The game is either really expensive or it's not available in the US yet. It's $70 on PS4 and $64 on Xbox One. I'm guessing maybe it's coming from overseas.
I steal it twice the price.
That's disappointing.
You should see the cover.
I mean,
though.
You know, I would love to play cricket, but I would also love to play cricket for free.
Oh, you know what? What is that cricket 14 or 15, TJ?
I think it's just 14.
Is it 14?
It's very confusing because it's
like we know the difference between the rosters.
This is, I mean, gosh, this is the
actually
this
all
is
the rosters
dilemma.
Are up there, which is kind
of
crazy.
This is the dilemma of how companies title their games in years. We're like, is it 14 or 15? Well, I don't know. When does the cricket season end?
Right, but here's the thing.
Spirits 25.
Yeah, the thing is, it came out in Australia on PS3 and 360 in April of last year. Then I guess it might be on Steam last June, and it's just now. Well, on Wikipedia it says February for PS4 and Xbox One.
So Rich, to answer your question, I have been playing Skyrim because I'm still waiting on a simulation quality edition of Professional Cuban Baseball 2015.
There you go. And how is your Skyrim campaign going these days?
You know, I'm amazed that you ask me about that, because if nobody gives a damn about your rotisserie league team or your fantasy football team, why the hell are they going to give a damn about my Skyrim character? he is, of course, the chosen one in about 9 different fields of study. You know, he's the Dark Brotherhood's listener. He is the archmage of the college at Winterhold. He leads the Thieves Guild. I mean, how many things can this guy do?
Is he the greatest?
That's what I've been doing. He is. You know, I wanted you know, our colleague Mike Suzek had the 4 in February challenge, I think it was, and I had all these optimistic, you know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to finish out that. Didn't do anything because I got sucked into Skyrim. Sorry.
Hey, it happens. Hey, Brian Weedy, what have you been playing?
So, yeah, other than our Madden League and, like, Trivia Crack on my phone, I played through the entirety, which is, I guess it's not saying that much, of The Order on PlayStation 4. I actually like the game a lot. It's not a $60, you know, the value is something less than that. But considering I bought it and then finished it in 2.5 days and then sold it for $45, it's not a bad deal. So yeah, you know, it's a fun story game, more of an experience, because a lot of it is cutscenes, but I enjoyed it quite a bit. I couldn't recommend it at, you know, $60. So, but that's pretty much it for me. Sorry, I don't have any fun stories that are going to go off on tangents like the remainder of the panel.
I continue to play NBA 2K15. It is right now January 26th, 2016 for my player, guy who is the starting two guard on the Phoenix Suns. He's averaging 25.4 points a game, 2.8 assists, and 5.4 rebounds. I'm hoping that I can get voted onto the All-Star team. That would be a whole lot of fun. My Suns are 33-10, so we're at the top of the Western Conference. I'm hoping that we can make a playoff run. I continue to just thoroughly enjoy the my player mode. I play every game. I don't simulate anything. And it's just, you know, for all of the cheesiness and all of the, you know, the grind of it, I don't know what it is about my player, but I just love it. And I'm also playing my GM. I have a very weird version of the Brooklyn Nets. I have traded away most of the good players on the team. The remaining good players are all injured, so I have a ridiculous I have just a ridiculous lineup of guys like Jarrett Jack and Kevin Martin and Nikolai Petrovic or Pekovic and Randy Foy and just this weird conglomeration. So right now the Eastern Conference semifinals and my Nets are down 2-1 to Derrick Rose and the Chicago Bulls, and I'm scared to play game 4 because if I get down 3-1, I don't see any possible way I can make that happen. So that's
Rich.
That's my yes, sir.
Rich.
Yes. Yes.
Is Markieff Morris still your mentor in my player? Is Markieff Morris still dispensing his monosyllabic wisdom to you in my player?
You know, it's funny you mention that, Owen, because just today, Markieff and I were lamenting two fellows who got traded away, and I had to choose to Markieff whether I said, yo, that's cold, man, or whether I said, oh, that's just the business.
So, and what did you choose?
Oh, I chose that's cold, man, you know, because I got to show the emotion, right? I'm now the emotional leader of the team.
You got to keep Markieff happy.
That's right.
That guy, absolutely, is like one of the Easter Island statues. I mean,
he can knock down a three every once in a while for me, though, which I appreciate. The other thing is I just finished a game called The Wolf Among Us. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this at all. It is a Telltale game. Those are the guys who make The Walking Dead as well as others.
Yes.
The Wolf Among Us came out last year, I believe. It's a five-parter.
I think they, like, episode one might have come out in 2013, but yeah, like the bulk of it came out last year.
Yeah, and so I picked up, you know, like a used copy of the complete episode on the PlayStation, or the complete game on the PlayStation 4, and played through it over the course of a couple weeks, and absolutely loved it. I mean, I had no knowledge of the universe that these characters come from. They're from old fables. There's a whole comics series from DC that it's based upon. Didn't need to know any of that. I played it, thoroughly loved it. Kind of grisly and murder mystery kind of a thing. But very original, very entertaining. Really had no expectations going into it. I'd heard people say that they liked it a lot, but I gave it a shot, and I really, really had a lot of fun playing it. So, you know, if you haven't tried The Wolf Among Us and you did like The Walking Dead, I cannot recommend it enough. Really good game. So that's kind of what I've been playing. So let's TJ, you have something else you wanted to mention before we get into the main topic. Go for it, man.
Yeah, I forgot that I've dipped my toe back into the golf club recently. Still has the same kind of problems as before, where you can hit 100% or you can not hit 100%, which is, you don't have that good touch, but I now have a 5.5 handicap, and I've signed up for TGCTours.com. I'm going to get my Q card, go to Q school, get my card, and start playing over there.
Yeah, you know,
Scott's pretty good.
The golf club has really gone above and beyond with just continuing to deliver new stuff, not just little things, but like significant things, like you're talking about, handicaps, and the seasons are coming, and different tours. You could be like, what, amateur and pro-am and professional and all sorts of different other stuff they got going on. It's very impressive what the golf club is doing.
Yeah, and it looks like there's a pretty decent community getting built around it.
Well, all right, enough about what we have been playing. The main topic for tonight is virtual reality. Obviously, we're still a few weeks away from the release of MLB The Show. We've got the big PAX East panel, so it seemed to me like a great time to bring up a topic that isn't necessarily something happening right now, but something that will definitely impact video games at large and potentially sports video games specifically. Now, you know, what the market for virtual reality is still uncertain. You've got Sony with the Morpheus, which is their headset device, which will be compatible with the PlayStation 4, which at GDC this week, as a matter of fact, there was some more news about. You've got Valve, who, you know, in many ways owns the PC gaming market, who has recently introduced their upcoming virtual reality headset device, which is an HTC device. Valve says that is coming out by the end of this year. The Sony's Morpheus, I believe, was announced to come sometime before the middle of 2016. And then, of course, you've got Oculus Rift, which is not available to consumers. None of these are available to consumers, but there are plenty of development kits that are floating around. And then, of course, you even got the Microsoft HoloDeck or whatever that thing is that they're starting to talk about, which I believe is, of any of these things, the most far off at ever getting in consumers' hands. So there's a lot of talk, there's activity, there are now even dates being thrown around when these are going to be commercially available. So I wanted to just have a conversation about what the potential impact will be to the games that we love the most around here, which are sports games. So I'm going to go around the table, and we're just going to start with a very specific question. And I'm going to start with you, Owen Good. We'll get into some of the more specifics about whether we think it will be successful with that, but let's just... The first question to you is, what sports experience would you personally be most interested in when it comes to any of these virtual reality devices?
None of them.
Wow.
And I, this is something that we'll talk about in greater detail, but part of the conceit of sports video games is that, you know, by the gameplay, the controls that you have, and let's not forget, you know, what we're doing is we're not playing, in a lot of cases, we're not playing sports as they are actually played. We're playing them as they're broadcast on television. And so all of that combines to, you know, give you this realization of talent that you don't have. And in virtual reality, I see myself placed on the field. Sure, a video game can give me Tom Brady's arm, but it's not going to give me his vision or his decision-making ability.
And, or his rugged good looks.
Well, that too. But standing down there, you know, field level, and trying to recognize, you know, am I going to throw it to Julian Edelman? You know, am I going to, you know, dump it off to the halfback? What am I going to do? You know, those are gameplay considerations. I think we all remember, everybody likes to talk about first-person football with NFL 2K5, which was just a novelty. Nobody knows how to play it, and anybody who says they do is a liar. I don't want to do that in my living room, much less standing up. I play sports video games because they give me the ability to perform beyond my means in a physical activity that I have, you know, done in real life. Skyrim. Okay, fine. You know, swinging a sword, that has a simple analogous act. And yes, you know, the logic of the game can make it more powerful than I could swing a sword in real life. Fine. It doesn't translate to things like decision making. I would really, you know, be fascinated to understand how VR could make pitching meaningful beyond just moving your arm. Because obviously there are different types of pitches and different arm motions. I think that everybody sort of assumes that sports video games are some kind of a natural frontier for virtual reality. I think they are the last frontier, because I think virtual reality is something that exposes the lack of physical talent you have rather than compensate for it.
TJ Larriman, what sports experience would you personally be most interested in a virtual reality device?
I think there's only two games or two sports that actually would make any sense with a VR headset on. One being boxing, because we all know that Tele-Row boxing on the Virtual Boy was really the only reason to have that console, if you would even call it a console. Another one would probably be golf. Especially with something like when they come out with Project Morpheus and you have the Move controllers, kind of like how we did Wii Sports, I think that would be a fun way to experience a golf game. But baseball, I think people would just throw up if they try to hit a pitch. Football, the way we play football, unless they somehow figure out a new dynamic to playing football games, the way you play football games now, you have to have that more overhead view so you can see the routes develop and hit those wide receivers. Maybe you could do something like where you just run. If you're just a running back, that could kind of work, but not really well. I think boxing would be cool because you are looking at the person and you're not having to worry about anything in your peripheral, and you could kind of focus on them and swing where you need to go. But then the problem is you don't have any feedback. Unless you want to buy one of those like $300 bulletproof vests that you wear that are supposed to shake you when you get hit. But yeah, I think sports games just aren't really the greatest place for virtual reality right now.
Sumit Sarkar, same question to you.
Well, you know, you guys are all curmudgeons here. I'm thinking big picture, you know, I'm thinking aspirationally. And I think that's how the makers of these devices are thinking. They're aspiring to a new paradigm, right? That's sort of a way of playing games that we wouldn't have considered really a decade ago to be possible. Even 5 years maybe, and now it's, you know, we're on the cusp of it. As Rich was saying, you know, we're getting some actual timelines for some of these devices. No, I mean certainly, I don't think you're going to be playing MLB 18, the show in, with Project Morpheus. But the thing is that I think the reason I'm optimistic about virtual reality for, you know, even for sports games, is that because it is such a new thing, a new concept, we haven't been able to wrap our minds around it yet. Because, you know, I don't think any of us have had, you know, really significant time with these devices. You know, I've played a little bit of like Half-Life 2 and Eve Valkyrie on the Oculus Rift and dabbled in some things here and there. But I just feel like, you know, we're not really equipped to even consider like what the possibilities are at this point for something like this. You know, we're not game developers. So you know, I'm sure that somebody will come up with something great that is a sports experience. I don't know that it will be a traditional sports game. You might be able to do like a home run derby kind of thing. But I think when you look at the different devices that are out there, it is going to be something for a sports game, probably that is augmented by additional devices, not just something that uses the headset alone. So you look at the Vive, which is the HTC and Valve collaboration. That thing is Valve going all in for, I think, as my colleague Ben Kachera put it in his write-up on Polygon, you know, it's really aimed at the hardest core players. So that is not only a headset, but this, you know, unique input system that comes along with it. So the way it works is, you know, I don't know if you guys have seen a picture of the thing, but there's like all these weird like things like LEDs and stuff on the face of the device, you know, the outward facing, the front of it. And what it does is there are like these two sensors, like these like kind of stands that you place in like the different corners of the space that you're in. And so those things track your position. And so the different demos that Ben played, you know, they used or required different spaces. You know, some were, you know, kind of small, and some were, you know, you need a little bit of area to roam around it, because the idea was that, you know, you would actually be moving around with this thing on your face, and it was going to be tracking that movement and translating it in the game, you know. So it is not just tracking, you know, the direction that your head is looking, right? It is actually tracking, you know, your physical body position, you know, where you are in your room. And in addition, that has these two, the Vive has these two wand controllers. Think of them as PlayStation Move, I guess, but, you know, they're devices, you know, they're in your right and left hand, but they're kind of complex and have also these like sensors on them. And so you think about that, that could be used for certainly like a boxing game, like TJ was talking about. I think tennis is another great candidate for VR. Thinking of, you know, something like, you know, even as simple as Wii Sports Tennis, right? Again, if you have a space to move around in, you know, it is not just an on-rails experience where all you're doing is flicking your wrist to swing the racket. You know, you are actually having to shuffle from side to side to reach, you know, the shot in the corner or what have you. So certainly I don't think that this is going to be huge for sports necessarily, but I think that the sort of possibilities at this point are you know, sure, say, oh, the possibilities are endless, but I honestly think that you know, we're just really not considering what the possibilities are, and I think that you know, there are potentially some really cool uses of the tech, especially depending on the actual device, whether it's a Rift or a Morpheus or Vive or HoloLens or, you know, whatever.
Brian Widai, what sports experience are you personally, you know, looking forward to the most, or what would you personally be most interested in?
So imagine this, everybody, imagine this. You're standing on the field, immersed by everything around you, the players, the crowd, the cheerleaders, the weather. You make a motion with your arm. You've just thrown a flag in Madden's innovative new officiating mode. How compelling is that?
I could see that, actually. In fact, No, I think that might be one of the seriously. I think that might be that, or a spectator mode might be right. Where sports, intersects with this.
I was going to talk about that actually, Owen. So my actual feeling on the VR is not so much for playing games, but it's watching or something external, not actually officiating mode, but something where added on to what we do. So imagine then you're wearing the device and you're watching a Twitch stream, and instead of just watching the stream of the game, how anyone would see the game, you're viewing it from like you're sitting in a seat in the stadium. So I think something like that could work. But otherwise, it's basically, when I think virtual reality, and I could be wrong on this, and in years we'll find out, you never really know. To me, it just seems like a gimmick, like motion gaming, where for sports games, it just doesn't make much sense. People don't want to be active when they're playing these games. Otherwise, everybody would be playing Madden on the Wii. I'm not sure the gaming purpose it could present, but I'm also not a visionary in this type of thing, so I guess we'll see how it turns out.
For me, I think what I'm not looking forward to is the total immersion in the world, or some combination of VR and God forbid motion, throwing, the ball, waving my hands in the air to throw it or swing it. I think what I would be interested in seeing if it could work would be just an extension of what I'm doing on TV, but just having it almost like in a little IMAX theater, right? Or sort of a surround theater where I'm still playing everything in third person. I'm still using a controller. I just have more, it just feels more like I am, in it, but not to where it's first person view and something like that. I don't know if you remember, but when the Wii U first came out, the FIFA game, if you held up the tablet and you turned around, it would actually be like a window into the stadium. So if you looked behind you, directly behind you, if you're looking at the goal on your television, you look directly behind you on the tablet, you would see the other goal. Or if you held the tablet pointing to the ceiling, you'd be looking into the sky. So the way that I'm sort of thinking I would be interested in would be able to play the games the way that we still do, third person, controlling everything with a controller, but having just, a much wider perspective of the game that could be, just a more interesting way as opposed to, a whole first person thing. And for me, I'm thinking, obviously playing a big NFL game, a playoff game, and just getting a much better feeling of the crowd and the coach on the sidelines and the banter on the between the players and things like that, I think could be interesting. So instead of like some sort of attempt at revolutionizing it through immersion and first person, just extending it to make it be more more sensory, but not some crazy direction that ultimately might not be completely sustainable. Oh, and good. I know you wanted to circle back on this a little bit.
Well, I think about it. When I write a story about a sports video game and I say this is a very realistic experience, and it's usually something that's a one-on-one sport like tennis or golf, the comments that I see underneath are always like, well, why would you play this game when you can go play this game in real life? And, I've taken golf lessons. I probably got it backward because, I went and played a ton of Tiger Woods PGA Tour on consoles, and it's like, this is great. I enjoy this game. I think I kind of understand the mechanics of this. I'm going to go take golf lessons and try to play it in real life. And I tried to play it in real life, and I was like, in the hell with this? This is work. So I think that's where VR comes into play, which is, it's the question is always posed, which is with sports games, it is, why are you playing this sport on a console, on a television, when you could be playing it in real life? Usually the answer is, well, because I can play it with a team that doesn't play where I live, because I can play on that team, because I can play any team in a manner that looks like it's broadcast on like a major sporting event, and all of these other fantasy options. But when you get down to the actual, to the act of playing a sport, you know, I can go play golf tomorrow at the country club near where I live. I can play tennis at the municipal courts where I live. I can run around a track. I can go, you know, if I wanted to take batting practice and had somebody to throw it to me, I can go down to the high school baseball field. There are all sorts of things. And I think that's where the fundamental problem with virtual reality and sports video games sort of converges back. Sports video games were the among the first video games because sports were very well-defined games, very balanced games, and easily represented when people were trying to, you know, figure out how to do a video game in the first instance, you know, Pong, tennis, that kind of thing. And now it's coming backwards, like, well, the more realistic we make this stuff, the more we expose the limitations of people's talent, and the more we create the necessity to practice. And I don't want to get like Allen Iverson here, but that's important, because if you don't know what you're doing in a sport, you're not going to have any fun. And unless the game has some way of either training you up or compensating for your lack of practice, you know, we're sitting here talking about being a franchise player, right? It is fascinating to me that at the beginning of video games, sports are there. And now on this new frontier, I just do not see any way in which a sport is appealing. Because the reality that virtual reality, you know, attempts to simulate, it's virtual reality, that's what it's called. The reality is so much better and so much more understandable. There's so much more visual and haptic, oh, there's a buzzword, feedback in how you shank a 7-iron shot than if you're playing with a, you know, a pair of goggles on your head and you're swinging a virtual club or having nothing in your hands even. You know, I would venture that I could probably shoot 120 on a real life course and 140 on a virtual one if you're talking about a true VR experience. And frankly, with the limited VR experiences we have now, the guys down at EA Sports in Florida playing on Kinect, the best one shoots like an 85 at Augusta. So, and that should tell you something. Those are the guys who build that game. And they should be the ones who should be shooting 59s. If they, you know, because they made it, they should know all the tricks. And they have made something that is either so exacting in its realism that it's pointed out how feeble they are at actual golf, or, you know, they've made something that is so technically impossible that no one can shoot the kind of score that you want to have in a fantasy experience. Nobody's going to play golf to shoot an 85. Nobody's going to play baseball to bat 212. Well, nobody is going to.
We already do in the show, Owen. We all hit 212 in the show.
Well, okay, right.
Online especially, you're looking at 150.
Okay. But you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know. I'm just being a
Right. I mean, it just, you know, people, again, this gets back to my original point, which is people play sports video games to have a greater understanding of athletic talent than they could ever have in real life. And virtual reality is meant to simulate real life. Well, if that's the case, you know, I don't want to go back and relive my junior varsity on the high school field that's 100 yards from where I live right now, because I know what I hit like, and it was crap.
Sumit Sarkar, you had some additional thoughts.
Well, first off, in terms of being able to put on goggles and be transported to a fantasy world, there's nothing I wouldn't give right now, considering the 4 to 6 inches of snow we're supposed to get between now and tomorrow evening, to just put on some goggles and end up in Yankee Stadium on a sunny day in July. That'd be something right now.
I'm with you there.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
And I don't even like the Yankees.
Well, you know, you could just go visit Monument Park where there'll be some new plaques pretty soon. Jumping off of something Owen said, you know, he was talking about the idea that you know, you always get the jerks in the comments, the just like in the Guitar Hero, right? Go play a real instrument. You know, here they're like, oh, why don't you just put down the controller and go outside and you know, have a catch or whatever. So you know, I think of the potential for this, for something that is, you know, perhaps tangentially related to sports, but, you know, is the idea of you know, maybe actually bettering yourself in some way, which is exercise, right? Like, you know, we've had so many exercise opportunities through you know, games on Kinect and things like that, right? But, you know, you could have what was that, you know, UFC trainer or something like that? I forget what it was. You know, you were doing these exercises with, you know, virtual things, avatars and stuff in the game. But here, you know, you could be doing, you know, you could have that that more. I mean, it sounds silly to say like immersive, but, you know, have the sort of impression of yourself, you know, in a gym, sparring with someone, you know, in a virtual ring, right? Or you know, you've got maybe you've got some dumbbells gathering dust in a corner of your bedroom, and you know, maybe you know, you put the goggles on and you know, you've got I don't know, I can't name a trainer right now. Jillian Michaels, sure, she's, you know, she's egging you on to actually, you know, get off your ass and pick them up and use them and lift and exercise, you know. So I think that's an area that's certainly developers could and probably will explore, considering how popular exercise games were, and, you know, I guess still are. So that's something where, you know, you might have a retort for the people who say, you know, go outside and play a real sport.
You know, and there's certainly a lot of different directions you could go. And yeah, virtual reality definitely opens up the opportunity, as we've said, a couple different ways. You know, okay, well, you could do this sort of small slice of something or that small slice of something. But on the other hand, I think that there's a lot of infrastructure set up today, you know, based upon multiple generations of Madden and NBA 2K and MLB The Show having already been created. So, Brian Wiedei, do you think that the big-time sports game development teams are working in any way on virtual reality or extensions of virtuality? Do you think any of these guys, you know, the big license boys, got anything cooking in the back of the lab for VR?
Important question, of course, is can you monetize it, Rich? No. Of course, I think they're probably looking into it and developing for the future and experimenting with it. But I don't know if that'd be something they would be focusing on for the next few years, at least. Unless, again, like we've kind of pointed out, it could be some kind of secondary thing, over-the-top thing, like motion gaming was for The Show or other sports games where you don't need it. 3D is another example, which The Show tried. You don't need it, but it's there if you want to try it. Obviously, Sony's going to need, for their technology, when Morpheus rolls out, they're going to need games for it. They're going to need something that utilizes it. They could look to their own game. Third parties, I'm not so sure yet, because which one of these things is going to end up being the dominant one? All of them can't be successful. So I'm not, you know, they're probably the smart thing is to hang back a little bit, see who comes out the winner. But I'm sure they're examining possibilities. I don't see it personally coming to fruition in the next few years. But again, I don't really know. I don't claim to know where these things are headed and how successful they're going to be. I just don't get the sense that it's something that's going to hit the mainstream. And if it's not mainstream, these companies aren't going to put much money into it.
Yeah, TJ Larriman, let's say that you're in charge of research and development for a big-time sports game maker, you know, at the studio. You know, you've got finite resources. You look back over the last 5 to 10 years, you've had motion control gaming kind of come and go. You've had 3D gaming come and go. Now you see virtual reality. You know that you've got to keep your game modern. You know that you've got to keep your game appealing to, you know, an attempt to appeal to at least the same audience and hopefully a wider audience. Do you invest your scarce resources in pursuing aspects of virtual reality gaming, whether it's, you know, the Sony Morpheus or whether it's Oculus Rift or other kinds of things that can that could potentially work with your game?
Nope, no way. And the only way I would is if I was an exclusive to one console, because we've even seen the stuff that Madden has done on Xbox to try to differentiate itself with the second screen experience. Nobody really cares about that stuff after 2 seconds, or, you know, yelling at your Kinect and getting a yellow card. That stuff never really seems to pan out. So unless you were exclusive to a console so you could target just the Morpheus or just HoloLens or just the Oculus Rift, then maybe. But that's not something that I don't think people are going to do. The only game I can see doing it is going to be The Show, because they did motion stuff when The Move came out, but I don't think this is a way anybody's going to go, because it's going to cost, and then you have to assume that people are going to buy the game and already have the hardware, or buy the hardware and then get this game. It's just not something I think that's going to happen.
And that's a good point. I'm sorry, let me jump back in. That's a good point, because it's just like when the original Kinect came out. You can't really release games just for that. It's a very small segment of people who will shell out, who knows what these things are going to cost, $300-$400 on top of what they already paid for their consoles. So you're reducing the consumer base you can direct your product to. So again, in that way, it seems to fit the idea of just something extra onto a game instead of pure experiences with it.
Own good, same flavor of the question to you. You know, do you think the big guys, you know, the EA's, Tiburon's, the EA Canada's, the, you know, NBA 2K guys in I guess they're out near San Francisco. I mean, do you think the big guys are pouring some R&D time and dollars into VR-based experiences?
No. I think that these developers, these publishers, go where the installation base is. And as we have seen with Kinect, which is, I mean, Xbox 360 was the dominant console in North America on its generation. And yes, there's a lot, you know, there's more competition in the latter half of that generation, and PlayStation, you know, is certainly a greater presence in North America now. But even then, with Kinect, you know, we saw all these grand promises, you know, Peter Moore up on the stage talking about, you know, calling out audibles to your receivers or whatever. And, you know, they did it for a year because I think a developer like EA Sports is obligated to put its major franchises on a new piece of technology to see if anybody gives a damn about it. As a toe in the water, because they can, because they're very successful franchises, because the development cost for those franchises is lower as opposed to something like NBA Live, you know, that they can use it as an experiment, and they see, okay, people really don't give a crap. So I don't think that there is much instinct or incentive to, you know, develop virtual reality, you know, versions or features for FIFA or for Madden, which are the two that launch with every new piece of hardware almost out of obligation. And I look at this and I go, you know, let's run it back to, okay, so Valve is partnering with HTC to create a virtual reality headset. And, you know, what Valve games do they make one of the partners in this,
Valve doesn't they don't make games anymore. So there's that. But
they make Dota, they make Team Fortress. Okay.
They haven't made a new.
They make Counter Strike. Well, they may not make new games.
That's
they,
my point. Yeah, yeah.
They well, don't make them right. Anymore. But it's like, you know, are people really going, you know, I want to play Team Fortress in first person reality, you know, immersive virtual reality perspective. Really? Are they? You know, what is Dota in a VR headset going to look like? Or play like. I mean, it may be something that is worth spectating. Getting back to Brian's original point, you know, about VR being useful to a sports experience because you can go anywhere to any point in the stadium and watch the game, you know, and that's it sure would be interesting to, you know, to be, you know, to have a camera perspective that's on the offensive line as a play takes place. Sure. And if that translates to Dota, great. But, you know, nobody has really sold, even the people who are backing this to the nines and who make games, they haven't justified how their games are going to be better or more interesting with virtual reality. It's just sort of a ride along. And so that takes me back to my original point, which is I don't think if I was in charge of EA Sports, if I was in charge of 2K Sports, and it was like, well, we've got Morpheus and we've got Viv, or I don't know how the hell you pronounce it, and we've got Oculus Rift, and these are things that are going to cost users, you know, $100 each at least.
Oh God, if only. Then they might act. Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking it's going to be twice or three times that, but you know, we'll see.
Right, and should we develop for them? No, because look at the Wii U. It's got a second screen that is part of the freaking controller that is in front of you, and if that thing is not, if the Wii U second screen isn't the most adaptable and functional piece of input equipment for an American football playbook, okay? Like, can you imagine? I mean, seriously, you're sitting there with your playbook as you are managing the input, you know, to your team. Yep. You don't have to go into a menu for it. This thing, the Wii U, should be the best Madden NFL console, period. And for whatever reason, whether it was because, you know, EA and Nintendo couldn't reach a deal on who was going to distribute whose games over what electronic platform or whatever, I don't give a damn. Theoretically, the Wii U should be the best American football video gaming console that is out there. And they don't have a current game. So because it requires specific development, but it also requires an audience. And the Wii U, I know that this pisses off Nintendo fans. Its installation base is fractional compared even to the Xbox 360 or PlayStation 3. So, you know, that is where publishers and developers go. And this is a nice, neat novelty. You know, you put on a headset, you hear the noise in your ears, you know, you can be on the field, you know, and have the crowd around you and all that other shit. But it, in the end, that's all it is a novelty. And that's not enough to get the major sports publishers, which, you know, we haven't even figured into the development costs, the licensing costs, and all the other things that ride along with sports development, which has contributed to the contraction of sports development over the past 8 years. It's just not enough to make VR attractive at all to the sports experience that all of us, you know, all four of us on this pod, five of us on this podcast, and everybody listening, you know, expects or anticipates. It's just, it's not there. Maybe it makes an interesting table tennis game, because there's no licensing involved, but it's not going to make an interesting NFL game because there's too much money to put into it at the beginning, and there is not enough people willing to pay for it because of all of the hardware cost.
So let's flip it around. let's let's ask a different question from a different perspective. Brian Wiedeye, sports gaming in virtual reality will be a mainstream activity if blank happens.
Wow. Imaginary scenarios. I don't know, because before motion gaming, before the Wii, I wouldn't have thought that would have been so popular. You know, it faded out, but I think, number one, it has to be accessible to people. It has to be, it can't be $500, right? Because this is an additional device you're buying to your console or your PC. And then the experiences have to be unique. It's not, you can't, just like we saw with mobile, you can't just take a console game, put it on a device that is touch-based, and think it's going to be the same experience, that people are going to buy into it the same way and get invested in it the same way. So, you know, it's all those things. It has to be accessible. It has to be, you know, reasonably priced. And there have to be the unique type of experiences for it. And I'm just not sure if that's going to happen. I don't see it happening again, but, you know, I don't know. It's hard for me to envision these scenarios, to be honest, because for me personally, I don't really have an interest in it. I don't have faith in it. But, you know, I'm open to seeing what happens.
Sumit Sarkar, sports gaming in VR in one fashion or another will be mainstream if blank happens.
Well, I can think of two things. First off, you know, Owen touched on this and others as well. I mean, it's really, it's a question of install base. You know, if, you know, right now you've got these four major systems that we know of that are in development, at the very least. You know, you got Project Morpheus, Oculus Rift, the HTC Vive, and HoloLens, which I guess more, you know, augmented reality than virtual reality, but, you know, whatever. Let's throw it in the same bucket. It's unclear, you know, when exactly those things will come out, and if it's also, you know, unclear, you know, what this, you know, which one is going to be like the best experience, right? And as we were saying earlier, with you know, Valve maybe going for the hardest core audience, you know, in fact, they'll probably will go aim for different markets. Who knows? But, you know, if one of them can, or multiple ones can grab enough market share, you know, just sell enough units. I mean, you know, we think of Kinect as a sort of laughingstock, right? As a failure, but you know, look at just the Xbox 360 Kinect, which was not a pack-in when it launched, right? It was $150 by itself. You know, Microsoft sold like 8 million of them in a few months, and then eventually I heard numbers like 24 million of the standalone Kinects. And that was
that's on still, that makes absolutely no sense to me. I cannot imagine 24 million actual people went out and bought that. That doesn't even make the right. slightest bit of sense to me. It's
right.
crazy.
Well, that higher number might include, you know, console bundles. But either way, there are, you know, millions and millions of Americans or people around the world who have that thing in their house. And that's the 360 version. That's garbage compared to the one that is available for the Xbox One. And you know, if you think about that, like, that is a pretty big install base. 25 million, I'm pretty sure that's more than the number of Wii U's that Nintendo has sold. So if you think of one of these four devices being able to you know, even approach that kind of sales figure, regardless of whatever time frame you know you think that might happen in, if there is that install base, if you know that's a market, and somebody is going to try to address that market, and one of the major publishers is going to probably give it a shot.
We talk about Kinect. Microsoft took Kinect out of its Xbox One bundle, you know, more than 6 months ago. That should tell you something about the consumer desire for this kind of experience, right there. It was deemed essential to the Xbox One console at its launch, and then it was deemed a hindrance to the sales of that, you know, of that piece of hardware. And Kinect is, you know, it's not necessarily a true VR experience, but it's certainly not a sit there with, you know, a twin analog in your hand experience. And Microsoft looked at it and said, okay, hey, we bet big on this. Didn't really work out. People aren't buying Xbox One because it has this huge hardware cost riding atop it that isn't there with PlayStation 4. So we're going to, you know, we'll remove it. It doesn't matter anymore. You know, we'll take the $100 off the top. That right there should tell you, you know, how people feel specifically about VR. I think VR is one of these things where it's like it gets a lot of attention. And I think you know, that HTC and Valve and Sony and everybody else who has something to show off about VR, you know, they're doing it right. They're showing it off at Game Developers Conference, which is all about cutting-edge stuff. It's all about theory. It's all about, you know, philosophy and sort of perfect world, blue-skying video games development where, yes, what if, you know, VR was the way we played games, and what games would we play through VR? And here we go. But when you get down to it, the consumer goes, wait a minute, I've already spent $400 on my console, $500. I don't know. What do you want me to buy, you know, on top of that? And then is that experience that I'm getting something that even appeals to me? And those are just two huge leaps. Those are huge leaps. And when we're already seeing console manufacturers with these kinds of VR analogs, and they're going, okay, well, we tried it. It didn't work. We're pulling it back. There's where the proof is. I mean, there is a wisdom of the marketplace that has been demonstrated so far.
TJ Lowerman. Oh, wait, go ahead, Smith. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, just to respond to that point, I would say the Xbox or the Kinect comparison is not a one-to-one comparison because, you know, I think – for one thing, you know, the sort of, you know, quote unquote failure of Kinect in terms of its viability for Xbox One, I don't think was necessarily a gaming related failure so much. I think that Microsoft included that device in the box at launch because they wanted to make an argument for the Xbox One as your all-in-one multimedia center, or like it's in the like full name of the damn console, right? So, you know, they wanted that to be the device through which you use voice control to navigate through menus and you know, change TV channels and you know, do all this stuff, you know, almost like the gaming stuff. You know, certainly there were games being developed for the Xbox One Kinect. You know, think of, you know, high-profile projects like Fantasia Music Evolved. But I think, you know, more so it was, as you were saying, a cost-cutting thing. They also, you know, they weren't seeing the sales.
I've got to jump in here and go, no, Microsoft's purpose for making Kinect an unavoidable inclusion of the Xbox One console bundle when it was sold at launch is because they wanted a device in your living room collecting information that they could sell to marketers. That is what the Xbox One Kinect is there for. And you can go back through, you know, all of the discussion about that device and what it's supposed to do and their own chief marketing officer and see statements that bear that out. That is the only justifiable purpose for making the Xbox One Kinect 2.0 mandatory, is to spy on you in your living room and collect data that they can sell to advertisers. That's it.
So, TJ Lowerman, are we looking at this completely wrong, sort of trying to force today's landscape on tomorrow's technology? Or, I mean, like, just for example, can you imagine trying to play a nine-inning baseball game with a giant bucket on your head, basically, which is what this is? Or is it really, I mean, is this really going to get spun a completely different way where somebody else is going to say or, you know, put together something that will be a sports experience, but just nothing like playing a game of Madden, nothing like playing a game of NBA 2K, but something different in short bursts that you can, you know, play for 3 or 4 minutes and then pass it to your friend or something like that? Is that potentially where this VR and sports gaming would go to be successful in mainstream?
Well, while I was sitting here listening to you guys talk, the only use case that I could possibly picture myself wearing one of these headsets would be if, you know how they sell those things that you wear on a plane now and they're like really janky little like heads-up displays so you can like watch a movie in glasses? If they could make the games like that so it looks like I'm playing on a 180-inch screen right in front of my face, I think that is a lot more interesting to me than we're going to do something crazy with this head tracking and all to get you in the game. Because I just don't think that there's anything VR sports related that you're going to play a full real game that is going to work. But if I had MLB The Show blown up huge in my face so it looks like I was standing, you know, behind the catcher or the umpire view that you get when you're batting in the game, that would kind of work in VR. But I don't want it to be VR. I just want it to be a really huge screen in my face that I'm just using my controller to do. Like, I don't even want to look around. I just want to – I want the batting view I have in MLB huge in my face and so I can see the whole – so I'm locked into my little surrounding. And then, you know, my house will get robbed. Everything will be taken out of my house. My house might even burn down because I'll be gone just in this little zone.
Or you'll take your headset off and you'll see your wife and your child pointing and laughing at you because you look ridiculous while you're doing all of that stuff.
I mean, there's been days that I've gone into my office in the morning. It's been nice and sunny out. And then, you know, I come out, I look out the window. I'm like, okay, it's dark. And I could have swore there wasn't 6 inches of snow on the ground when I came in here. And I think that's how it's going to be when you put your head into these things and lose yourself.
So let's close with this. Brian Wiedeye, take sports games out of it. Do you have any concerns overall about these virtual reality devices, you know, personally? And where do you, just as, you know, as somebody who loves video games, you know, where do you sort of stand? What are either excites you or causes you trepidation about virtual reality as it appears to be coming down the line to consumers in the next 12 to 24 months?
Well, there are always people who have certain disabilities or conditions that prevent them from – it could be prevent them from using a controller or prevent them from taking part in a motion-based type game. For me, I think this stretches to more people, though, and that's, you know, how many physically can wear a device on their head and then be enveloped into that environment without issues. So for me, I'm not sure I could ever even use a virtual reality headset because I suffer from vertigo. It's a condition called Meniere's disease, which involves I lost the hearing in one ear, and I have some really bad vertigo from time to time. And it's not even so much that I think it would make me dizzy, but it's the weight on my head that would probably make me feel nauseous. And then there are other people, motion sickness is a big one. Anytime they get drawn into something like a virtual reality headset, some people can't do 3D for the same reason. So I think there are a number of concerns I have in that regard. Would it really be mainstream? Is that something people can handle physically or want to do in the first place? So for me, when I've been watching developments on virtual reality and stuff, it's hard for me to get excited about it at all because I'm not sure I could actually utilize it. And I'd be interested to see, you know, how other people feel about actually using it themselves as opposed to what the games would be. Using the actual device and wearing it.
Shimitsar Kaur, sports gaming aside, where do you stand on your personal level of interest and excitement or lack thereof for virtual reality gaming as we think it's going to be over the course of the next year or two?
Well, with that qualifier, you know, I mean, I'm excited in a general sense, really excited for the possibilities. I don't know that we'll really, you know, see the full potential unlocked within just the next year or two. I mean, who knows if all of the devices, like the four main devices we've talked about, will even be out by that point. You know, like HoloLens may not be or whatever. I think, you know, if we're talking about, in a general sense, you know, you asked earlier about VR becoming mainstream. I don't know if VR will ever be, you know, mainstream in the same way that video games overall have become. I think, you know, it is inherently a much more niche experience because, I mean, just the barrier to entry, right? I mean, you know, you if you're going to have Morpheus, like, you've got to have a $400 PS4, and then who knows, the headset itself might cost $500, might cost $1,000. You know, Sony's got those HMZ or head-mounted personal displays, like the things TJ was talking about for watching movies on a plane. Those things are like $900, $1,000 to buy themselves. So obviously that limits the potential audience right there just on a price issue. But I think overall, you know, there's a lot to be said for the you know, physical and sort of medical limitations that Brian was talking about, and even just, you know, the people's idea of the old, like, you know, you'll burn your eyeballs out or whatever. You know, there are a lot of parents who didn't want to buy the 3DS for their kids because they thought that might, you know, cause long-term damage. So, you know, all of that, you know, when you take it into consideration, who knows? At the same time, I'm really optimistic overall for, you know, for thinking long term, just because VR itself has so many applications outside of video games, and I you know, mainstream is, like I said, a word that I don't know if it'll ever apply in terms of, you know, like, Sony sold like, what, 150 million PS2s. Like, who knows if you know, VR will get there. But I think if you want to look, let's say between now and like 2020, I think we'll see some, you know, really, really cool stuff. And I think included in that will be some pretty awesome and immersive sports experiences.
TJ Larriman, overall, sports gaming aside, what's your level of excitement and expectation for VR gaming for yourself in the next 12 to 24 months?
Yeah, well, see, I have this problem where I like to buy gadgets and crap all the time. So I'll probably end up getting some sort of VR headset, even if it's just the Samsung Gear VR. But then I would need the Galaxy Note 4, and then you get into that whole thing. But
I can't wait to watch you on your stream wearing those things. It's going to be entertaining.
Listen, I would do it, so.
Oh, I know you would. That's
why.
If I
could figure out how to stream the game, too, I would definitely do it. It would be pretty awesome.
We need a window with you and a window with the game. Absolutely.
Yeah, we can put together a two box for that. But yeah, I just because I love technology, I hope this stuff does great and blows up and is awesome. Not blows up while it's on your face, but I mean, like, in the area of becoming more of a mainstream thing, so. Hopefully it works out and it's not a dud, because don't get me wrong, that thing that I played in like 1992 in Blockbuster where I was shooting some dragons with a headset on, that was the worst thing I've ever seen. So hopefully this will be better.
Owen Good, your personal level of excitement or interest, you know, sports gaming aside, in VR over the course of the next 12 to 24 months?
Well, if I haven't been vehement enough already... you know, sports video gaming is console based. Okay, the presence on PC platforms for sports video gaming is what? It's, you know, management simulations. And if you're going to make that interesting or relevant to virtual reality, you know, God bless you. I'd love to see how that's going to happen. So until one of the major consoles you know, PlayStation 4, Xbox One says, okay, we're going with virtual reality. We're making it affordable and interesting to consumers. I don't see sports getting involved in it at all. I see it as a novelty in the next 12 to 24 months, the span that you've just given us. Frankly, I've seen it. I see it as a novelty, you know, within the next 5 years. I don't see any compelling interest for sports video gaming to get involved in this with all the other costs that sports video game developers have to pay that other developers don't, you know. I mean, you know, we've seen, I mean, when, you know, the Oculus Rift has been around for what, 2 years, all right? And we've seen, you know, you can ride a roller coaster in Oculus Rift. You can get your head chopped off on the guillotine in Oculus Rift and all these other amazing proofs of concept. And they sold for whatever million it was to Facebook. We haven't seen a single commercial product for that yet. And if there was a product for it, it would be something that you would have to experience with a PC where sports has zero meaningful presence. So, you know, this is a non-entity in the sports discussion.
Well, all right. It's certainly hard for me to argue that sports gaming faces an uphill battle if it were to become part of the VR ecosystem, as it were. I think there are opportunities. I think there are much larger challenges than opportunities. But I do believe that if VR is able to buck the trend of sort of the peripherals of the last few years, and that those peripherals have basically, for the most part, failed, but if the virtual reality, if one or more of these actually does emerge as a viable product with a install base that is, you know, significant enough, I think somebody will try something. And when I say somebody, I mean the big boys. I mean, you know, if in 3 years there are 2.5 million Sony Morpheuses in the space, I have a feeling that Sony will probably try to make something happen in the VR space with MLB The Show or something like that. But I certainly agree that these companies are going to be much more cautious than they might have been several years ago. And I think that, it's going to be there's a lot more that's going to have to go right than wrong for the big guys to consider really putting their cards on the table when it comes to a technology like this. But on the flip side, I have a feeling that if it could be done correctly, it would be really the first true innovation in sports gaming that we've seen in several generations. Whether that is true immersion, where you do feel like you're part of the action, or whether it's simply a, you know, 360-degree view of the field in a third-person view, virtual reality does present a real opportunity for innovation. And that, if nothing else, should give us, you know, reason to hope that virtual reality and sports gaming could be something worthwhile in the future. So thank you, everybody, for listening. I appreciate it. Once again, please, if you are in Boston at PAX East on March 7th, Saturday, March 7th, come see us at 4:30 at the Bumblebee Theater, the Press Row Podcast, talking about sports games at the Crossroads. As always, I thank our panelists, Brian Weedy from Pasta Padre, T.J. Lyerman from That Sports Gamer, Owen Good from Polygon, and Sumit Sarkar from Polygon. I am Rich Grisham. Thank you, everybody. We'll talk to you again real soon. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast, brought to you by Operation Sports. We ask that you please subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher and the Windows phones. We also ask that you give us a rating. That really helps us a lot. We also ask that you please follow each of our panelists on Twitter, and they are as follows. Polygon's Owen Good at Owen Good. Pasta Padre's Brian Weedy at Pasta Padre. Polygon's Sumit Sarkar at Sumit Sarkar. That Sports Gamer's TJ Lowerman at That Sports Gamer. US Gamer's Cat Bailey at The_CatBot. Operation Sports' Chris Sanner at ChrisSNR. and Operation Sports Steve Noah at Steve_OS. And of course, me, Rich Grisham at Rich Grisham. So thank you so much for listening to the show. We really appreciate it, and we really want to thank the great people at Operation Sports for making this show happen every single week. So thanks, and we'll see you again next time.